Welcome to the Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm Chris Evans, and I'm joined by my co-host, Martin Glasborough. Today we're discussing the subject of all-flash. Does it justify a market segment? And today we're joined by Bob Madeo from Hitachi Data Systems. Bob, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure, thanks, Chris. I'm really excited to be here. I and my team drive the infrastructure product marketing. So we do all the storage at Hitachi Data Systems, our converged infrastructure servers. And I've been in the storage market since 1997. I live out here in Massachusetts, so I'll let you imagine who I may have worked for in the past. But great to be with you guys. I think everyone knows Hitachi Data Systems. We're a sizable chunk of the massive Hitachi in industrial complex, if you will. Great company focused on a lot of IoT. Hitachi Data Systems very much focus on the IT side of that and connecting with what Hitachi does and with all of our customers. So thank you guys very much. This should be great.
Okay, thanks, Bob. So the subject for today, all flash. Okay, so all flash has been highlighted as a market segment within the storage industry. And clearly that was done in the past because there were loads of startups who came to the market with new products very specifically built around all flash. But obviously since then, all of the vendors have either amended their products or they've acquired technology. And really, the question we want to talk about today is, do we really think there's justification for having that separate market segment? Or should we flip it on its head and say, actually, all flash should be the norm, and the rest of those products out there are legacy arrays?
You're saying should be the norm, Chris, or will become the norm?
Or will become the norm. Good point. I think ultimately what we're saying is, you know, should we just stop talking about all flash and should we move on? Let me set the scene a little bit and talk about the way the market has gone and give people a little bit of background, and then we can get into some real detail. Originally, I guess people would look at it and say that the market for all flash started around 2008, if I've got my numbering right, when EMC put the first SLC devices into the DMX platform. You agree with that, Martin?
Yeah, it's really that long ago. But yes, you're probably right. And how long have they been talking about doing other things with that ever since? So, yeah, probably the first people.
Yeah, I think it was 2008. So obviously since then we had Violin with the, I think the original model they had was the 1010, which was the all memory device. We saw an event recently. And then we had, I think, a two-track approach. So we had all of the startups that brought products to market, like Pure Storage, Caminario, Extreme.io, acquired by EMC. And then companies like Bob's company went down the route of developing their own all-flash integrated into existing products. So from your point, Bob, your company's perspective, you decided to go down a slightly different route.
Yeah, you know, the majority of our offerings are looking at our current product line that we had and customizing the software and developing unique devices. I mean, most vendors, not all in our industry, are using kind of standard SSDs, which we support. But we started the development of what we call our flash modules and actually brought them to market in 2012 and have a lot of IP in the capacity as well as updates to the code to try to keep as most of all of our flash in a single product family, if you will. So we did the same SLC thing a little after EMC, I guess, 2009. But you know, now we're at quite a bit of our infrastructure that gets shipped out to customers is flash or all flash. And I'm sure we'll get into that.
Okay.
I think it's important to point out, Chris, that you talk about SLC into DMX in 2008, but later on we mentioned IBM's acquisition of TMS. TMS will say they've been doing all flash for an awful long time.
True enough.
I hate putting together timelines where people quote certain things because people talk about, say, VMware, and I'll go back and go, yeah, well, IBM invented virtualization in 1972 or 73 or whatever. So it's really difficult putting a timeline together, but I guess when you look at it, you go with what you think is a generally accepted timeline that people work with, and I think in the modern age, probably 2008 was a good measure. But you're right, IBM acquired TMS. TMS have been doing flash products, I think, for at least 25 years, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, probably. I probably had an all-memory device as well. There was somebody else who had an all-memory device as well. Can't remember who it was.
I would say, I think, Chris, you're safe with 2008 being sort of Flash's main incursion in the general purpose market anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So then we had, I guess, a market expansion, and we started seeing in the last couple of years other vendors who perhaps came to market with hybrid solutions starting to bring out all Flash versions of their products. And I guess off the top of my head, I can think Tegile, Tintri, and so on. They've started to bring out you know, an all-flash version and take advantage of the fact that they had an architecture that could use flash quite efficiently. And finally, just to finish that off as a sort of a rough timeline, we of course started to see a huge number of features being added to products. So we've seen compression, dedupe, you know, and all of the stuff that would have been in a traditional array being added to the all-flash arrays.
I pretty much agree with that. That's not bad.
There is some little small points off the curve on different server flash initiatives, but from a storage perspective, I think you've nailed the big ones.
And we could argue the small details, but I think if you know, let's work with that as a guideline.
So, Bob, architecture. If we actually look at the timeline which Chris has put together, we're talking about EMC putting SLC devices into DMX. Obviously, you guys did something very similar in 2009, but that was putting flash devices into already existing arrays. Do you think this makes it good enough, or do you think it was important for people to go back and actually redesign their devices for flash?
No, I think that's a good question. I think a couple things. I think it certainly helped, but I think we quickly saw that the speed of flash exposed some challenges in those systems. If vendors in general, didn't go back and sort of re-architect. I mean, our big one was in 2012, we had to go back and we announced sort of rewritten system code because we couldn't keep up the way we wanted to with the flash media. And that was a big, big evolutionary change for us. And then we've done some things since then to continue to improve on that, including, you know, this week here, we're doing even more things and bringing out new features that are flash specific. I think the startups challenged us all to rethink what we had to do to make sure we could fully expose flash. And some architectures were better suited than others, admittedly. We knew from a software perspective that we had to go back and do some hard work. And I think others some reluctantly, some quickly went back and done the same.
It's been interesting to see that there's some distinct architectures beginning to appear. We have almost things which look very much like a traditional two-head array, things like Pure Storage, and then you have Solid Fire, where you've gone down the scale-out route. Arguably, Extreme IO did so prior to acquisition by EMC. Do you have any thoughts about scale-up versus scale-out in Flash?
I don't think one is necessarily better when considering Flash. I think if you had a preference for scale out in an HDD world, you may still have that preference. I think architecturally, there's benefits on all sides. If you look at our portfolio, we have, you know, the dual controller scale up, and we have whatever you want to call our largest G1000 and now G1500 systems and F all flash variants, which are sort of scale out within the box where you can add processing power. And there's good and bad reasons. Obviously, the incremental growth of a scale-out system does have some attractiveness, but you know, the simplicity of deployment and able to add performance and capacity, we can still accomplish a lot of that on scale-up, and that tends to be where we see it a lot of customer interest. But I'll say I don't know that flash specifically changes it. I think and back to where Chris may end up and yourself steering us here is, does the media make a market? And I don't know that the media necessarily makes the architecture in either scale up or scale out, if the code is ready to take advantage of it and you know how to do the feature set on top of it. So I'm not sure specifically it matters.
Yeah, I think you're right at one level. Certainly from an end user point of view, architecture may not matter as long as the array does what I want it to do and does it in an efficient and effective manner. We sometimes find that obviously we end up with architectural wars. We've seen them through the history of storage. And at times I think we just see them being played out again. Any thoughts?
Yeah, so from my side, I think you're right. I think we do get into these architectural discussions. And let's be honest as well, right? Vendors have placed certain bets architecturally, and some of those bets are hard to change. And so battle lines are drawn from a marketing perspective as well. I mean, I think one of the things to me is, and we saw this, if you look at what are the most popular all-flash systems today, I think the vendors who are at the top of that market share percentages have a variety of architectures. You know, give Pure, they were an early disruptor. Give them some credit. They're more of a dual controller scale up. Look at the Solid Fires or Extremes. Those are more scale out. And so I think it's a little bit on what customers need and expect. And I think it's a little bit about what bets the technology vendors who have got big marketing budgets are placing.
So I've got one bit to add, which is a bit of a, I guess, a slight tangent. And that, to think about where we've gone with the media. So if you go back to where we would have been in 2008 time, when we were looking at having only SLC to choose from, the architecture had to be based around the fact that the media was obviously had a lifetime. It, you know, had certain foibles about the way it worked and so on. And the initial architectures were based around the fact that the media needed to be dealt with a certain way. However, in the time that it's taken us to sort of develop the all-flash market, the vendors who actually make the media have come out with better and better devices. So we've got devices that last longer, that are more tolerant. We've got, you know, technologies that over-provision within those devices. And as a result, I think a lot of the initial architecture that might have been based around looking after the media probably hasn't had to be as aggressive about that side of things as it used to be.
I think that's a really good point. And I think you end up in a discussion around if it does lessen the architectural needs, what are the trade-offs you get for that new code? So if the code was written with its primary goal on extending life of Flash, and that's where its feature set came from, and the market and the media is maybe moving more toward a consolidation and not as preoccupied with the life of Flash, if you haven't given up a feature set on things like protection and such, then great. But if you're architecturally tied to something that was built for media protection alone, then you probably are rethinking.
I was going to say, I think it's been interesting to see how startups have managed to take consumer-grade Flash and tried and turn it into an enterprise-grade device. So we've seen some interesting moves in that, and it's also been interesting to see consumer Flash, the acceptance of that has really driven the enterprise market, because you're hard pushed these days to find people who aren't running their laptop with an SSD or their desktop with an SSD in it. So everybody's beginning to expect levels of performance. And I also think this is driving some understanding of how Flash does behave. We are all full of horror stories or warnings that all your Flash drives are going to fail at the same time. So understanding where leveling and such was going to be important. But I think we're beginning to, everybody's getting a lot more comfortable with the idea of Flash full stop.
See, that there's the point, Martin. I think you've highlighted a big point, and that's really people didn't know how Flash was going to work, really, in the wild. And as we've learned that actually it's not as horrible as it could be, well, we've been able to amend our architectures as a result. Now, I've got one quick question to finish this section off for Bob before we move on, and that's really to just ask the question, Bob, and this is not to be put you on the spot or anything, but Hitachi chose to go down a different route to the other vendors and build their own Flash modules, yet then has come along and brought out products that are based on commodity devices. There's been a sort of a play to do both things in the marketplace.
Yeah, no, I think it's fair. Our strategy is a bit different. I know others, I think you mentioned Violin. I think Pure has changed their path a little bit with their new Ray, and they're actually building some of their own media. I think it's twofold. One is obviously on the industry standard components, which we do support across our product line, but in our VSP family, which is where the bulk of our focus is, it's a very small percentage of capacity. So you do get a cost curve. You get an industry cost curve. You get, obviously solid designs, although there's a certain design point that balances, you know, enterprise capability and cost against a number of other things. I will say this. I think when the first designs of our Flash modules came out, one of the concerns was, similar to the whole industry as we just talked about, the longevity, the lifespan. Also things that still are an issue, but maybe we don't talk about quite as much anymore, things like managing performance when the device is full and under a heavy write load. Early SSDs really struggled with that. So our first gen really helped us around that. The reason we kept with this strategy and have it today, though, is we do things a little bit differently as the kind of engineering company we are. Today, what we're doing is we're actually pushing some data reduction and other offloaded features down to the device level. Because to the point we started a few minutes ago, when you choose an architectural path, let's not kid ourselves about the investment. If you are adding Flash into a device that may have a pre-established base, you can certainly go back and change. But you can also say, hey, some features I can change in the storage system level. Some features, in our case, like compression being the most obvious one, if I can push that down to the media and not burden my storage system, what advantages might I be able to exploit there? So we started with maybe a protection and performance concern, and now we've gotten to an offload. If I build a device that has a bit more computing power, what else can I do in that device? So we want to play as many of these angles as we can, because the industry is moving faster than I know certainly any time I've ever been watching. And so we want to have our finger in all of these pies, if you will. But we see some value in having intelligent media, and it is a unique strategy by and large, but we're seeing our customers, based on what they're asking us for and what we're shipping out to them, certainly our customers prefer it in our systems, at least.
Do you think you get a trade-off there, Bob, between if you have your own specialized media, slowing down how quickly you can innovate to react if somebody comes out with it, I can't think of any new feature which somebody's going to come up with, but do you think there's a risk of being so engineering focused?
I think it is a potential risk, sure. If we drop the ball on a delivery or have an engineering project gone awry that slows us down, we will have a challenge. So one of the things we're doing is trying to find that balance, and we do want to stay on top of the SSD market. Maybe something we lagged a little bit when we first brought out our flash modules because we didn't see it as a need, but I think you'll see us really pick up the pace and have both. But I will say this, it is something that we need to be careful about. Our history has been pretty good. I knew the capacities on SSDs are growing very rapidly. We just announced a 14 terabyte FMD. I know that there's up to 15 terabyte SSDs out there. But again, ours compresses automatically, so we get that advantage. Can we keep up? That's the challenge to Hitachi Engineering. So I guess the bet is on. We'll see.
So you can certainly tick the box, Bob. They'll be happy that you've waved the flag for Hitachi in that last little segment, can't you?
That's great. Have I planted it?
Yeah.
All right.
So go on.
Well, if we don't keep up, you guys are going to have me back, and I'm going to have to answer to why we're shipping all these SSDs sometime in the future.
Exactly.
I'm on record.
Exactly right. Go on, Martin. Then lead us on to the next topic.
Oh, features. Okay, so Bob, if we look at the features, we're getting to a stage where I think that almost every single array you can talk about has the same feature. I mean, so we expect them to have compression, we expect to be able to dedupe, we expect replication, we expect snapshots. So do you think we've got parity across the industry yet? Do you think there's an entry level now, which do people just expect?
I think we have data sheet parity, meaning if I were a novice in the industry and I just pulled down a bunch of data sheets, I think it would be very difficult. And I, call it the vendor Olympics, if you will. I do sometimes feel for our customer base. I think there are still some meaningful differences, although I think there's certainly now a watermark that you have to get above. One thing that at least I have always looked at it as, and I think why we're seeing a bit of a consolidation in the market and things getting tighter certainly, is if I was looking at an all-flash array, I would expect the features I had with my, let's call it traditional array, plus some level of data reduction. I mean, if you think about it as something less than that, the question is why? You're not putting these on applications you don't care about. So I think that expectation shouldn't necessarily be to all flash arrays have the same feature set. It should be, can I get the features that I am used to exploiting for some level of benefit in all flash as I could in other systems, not have that trade-off?
Do you think data reduction may actually be more important than some of the traditional features? So certainly as we move into a proposed DevOps world where more and more stuff is being done at the application level, so you may not necessarily care whether your array supports replication or snapshots, because you're doing it all in the application. So what you really care is efficiency, so compression and dedupe.
Yeah, it's a good question. We see some architectures going that way, right? It's the whole, I don't know, pick your analyst term later, mode two or your third platform. We see some of those applications architect more features in, but Oracle and databases and Exchange and others have been architecting features in. It's this constant IT architecture discussion of what do I want to consolidate? Where do I want functionality to run? Is deduplication more important in those environments or compression? I guess the other question is, what will be the data management layer above the storage array? And will that have its own deduplication and compression? Some, if I look at object stores, if the future is, flash on production and more of an object world, and that ends up sitting on solid state media for lots of environmental and other benefits, maybe that's actually done at a higher level as well. So, I think from a vendor perspective that I have, we can't know exactly what application, if I'm walking into an Oracle database, we'll want to use compression. The next one I walk into might be encrypted at the database or compressed already, and it won't be of any value, and they'll only care about doing an active data center. So, unfortunately, from a vendor perspective, I don't know that I have clarity yet on the application needs across such a wide set of applications that we're going to need to support going forward. that I can say it's taken over in priority, but it's certainly becoming a critical element for sure.
I was going to say, and there's one feature which actually has some challenges around with Flash and the impact it has. If we assuming what we're putting Flash in for performance, which is a conversation for later, replication. If we have synchronous replication, we're going to slow all our Flash down. So there's a lot of people like yourselves and EMC and IBM who spent quite a lot of time working on synchronous replication. That for a lot of people is going to become less important, certainly in a Flash environment.
You know, as much as I agree with that idea, I will say in our base, we are still seeing it. And again, I guess it's a relative benefit. You would think that the spinning media delays would hide a lot of any advantage in that space, but we are still seeing a fairly significant proportion of synchronous requests. And I think it remains the reality that on that traditional, I don't know, OLTP business driving application, it hasn't made that move to a higher level replication. And if they can get an advantage out of Flash, they're going to do it. I will say for us and probably some of the other vendors you mentioned who have this more active multi-site technology, we are seeing synchronous replication move more toward this idea of active for short distances. But I'm seeing it with all Flash. As much as we would agree with your theory that Flash would all be async, we're seeing both. So it is an interesting one.
So on that front, I would say that remember that you're only delayed for writes there. You're not delayed for reads. So if you've got a reasonably heavy read intensive application, you'll still see all the benefits of Flash. It's only the write side of, isn't it? Really?
That's very true, Chris. Very good, yeah. Good point. Yeah.
I'd just like to make one other point, Bob, and that's the fact that the most popular thing on the various different blog posts I've had, or one of the most popular ones, has been the all Flash array comparison. So people love their data sheets. They love looking at numbers and doing that comparison.
Well, this is when it's hard, right? I mean, we compete with all sorts of vendors. Some, you know, have really great feature X and not so great feature Y. But once you say you have a feature, you say you have a feature. And this is probably a conversation we'll get into, is how the heck should customers actually test this? I mean, let's use deduplication and compression just as an example. The underlying algorithms across vendors are probably not all that different. You know, a lot of us use reasonably standard algorithms. Our compression can run in Flash media, meaning it runs very differently than another vendor's. What is the performance impact? How the heck is a customer going to know that at the top of the, you know, when they read through the data sheet? I mean, we've just introduced deduplication across our VSPs. Is there a performance impact to that? Absolutely. When you announce goofy marketing numbers, you know, 4 million IOPS in a system, and you reduce that because you're running dedupe, will a customer ever see it? How do they know? And this is what's hard. How do you compare at that level? It's becoming more of a challenge.
So did you say you've just introduced dedupe? Did I miss the press release?
Well, that very much depends on when we're recording and when we're posting.
Well, that obviously means that I need to go back and look at my inbox because I probably got something I haven't read yet. So dedupe is imminent then.
So, yes. So this week, assuming you post this week, yeah, we'll be talking about adding that feature across what we call our storage virtualization OS. And we'll have selectable deduplication as well as compression in software. But our software will know if you're using our Flash media and let that do the compression so it doesn't burden the controller. So yes, we know. And let me be, look, I didn't mean to necessarily get into an announcement commercial, but I'll own the fact that we were late to deduplication for block storage. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that, right? So I'll try to maintain some level of equilibrium here. But yes, we went in, and to the point I think it was Martin made earlier, we added that into our architecture. Does that make it easy? Not necessarily, but the benefits of using, we thought, the rest of our software functionality with it made more sense than scrapping everything we had. So, yeah, that is a big part of what we're doing right now.
I was going to say, so this brings us into the whole area of performance. I mean, you mentioned about testing. Do we need new benchmarks? Because the existing benchmarks don't actually cater for data reduction techniques. So I think this brings us into a whole new area. And then you end up saying, well, where's my trade-off?
Let me just fill something in there. I think I've seen loads and loads of claims about performance. I've seen evaluations that have been done on performance. And from my perspective, the results have been really, really variable. And I think that side of it is really interesting.
Well, and the one point I was going to make was the first issue we have is Hitachi's been reasonably good about doing SPC benchmarks, which really don't have an all-flash element to them today. And we've been okay with doing, you know, spec-type network storage benchmarks. But I still wonder, outside of a marketing bullet I get to throw at someone, like a guarantee and a performance benchmark, if they were ever fully utilized in the industry. So while I do think something different is required, and I know some firms have come out with some options, lots of vendors also propose their own options, which is always a little tricky. But I guess the question would be, is anyone going to use them? Because we get very mixed results or mixed impressions on the applicability. And if you don't use them, you're down to proof of concept work. And as we know, that's rather tricky, especially in Flash. That can be tricky.
I do wonder whether we should go back and look at it and say, should we be running some sort of profiling? Should we be looking at the workload and trying to build a profile and then apply it? I think it's a tricky thing, really.
I've been saying for a long time that benchmarks, most of the benchmarks, even prior to Flash, didn't actually mean very much to most of the users out there. It seemed to be a marketing number which some of the vendors got very hung up on. And then it was a race to hitting 1 million IOPS or 2 million IOPS. And you start looking at these things thinking, well, it doesn't actually have any particular applicability to my workload.
You must see that, Martin. I mean, you know what's real and what not. What is not real in that sense. And it's great coming up with a number, but as you said, it's that theoretical 1 million IOPS, and it was like the one millisecond performance mark that we all had to get below, and then there was the 500 nanoseconds. Am I in the right
now? Microseconds.
Microseconds. Crikey! Can't believe I can't get my my units correct tonight.
The only technical thing I'll be able to correct.
Yeah,
today,
that's
so
perfect. Thank
I'm
you,
good
that,
now.
Bob. Yeah. It ticks the box. I cancel out all the other things I said earlier. So yeah, you're right. Yeah. So you know. But those are numbers that aren't really necessarily real because they don't necessarily translate to what you use in your application or in the real world.
And one of the things we've found, I don't know if you guys have seen this, is obviously the best testing comes with real data. And that's both tricky on a customer, but also in a Flash space, it has lots of data traveling concerns because people don't want their real data to leave. And Flash media is extremely difficult to eradicate data from, just because of all the save space and the layers within the SSDs and the flash media. So, I mean, there's some things we can do, but it does make it interesting. And what we've seen is, I think the customers who can leverage those public benchmarks, if they trust them, tend to be the smaller customers because they're not about to set up necessarily a massive lab and have the expertise or time to bring systems in early and do all that testing. So it does become an interesting battle, and I think it's different by size of customer.
So could we justify having somebody who actually does all of that testing on our behalf and the vendors actually submit to it in a more real-world way than, say, SPC? It sounds like we might do or we might not.
Yeah, if you can solve that, we'll put you right up there for United Nations next.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay. All right. So let's move on and have a chat about how this affects the business, because we've talked lots about technology and we've talked lots about how we implement it and deploy it and so on. But really, you know, we're only putting this technology in because it has some benefit to the business, and the performance impact theoretically should translate into a business benefit one way or another. The problem we have, of course, is the fact that Flash is inherently more expensive, and people tend to use standard benchmarks, dollar per gigabyte, dollar per terabyte. You know, what are you seeing them in the market, Bob? And, you know, are you trying to educate people to a better way of thinking?
We're trying. And there's a huge difference between customers who have extensive experience with Flash or all Flash and those who don't, I think. For those who don't, it's hard to get off the dollar per gigabyte starting concern. And of course, you get an entire discussion around effective capacity, which can very much cloud every discussion. What I'm finding is interesting is for customers who have more extensive experience with all Flash in particular, and in fact, we had a customer come out to Flash Memory Summit present, and it had the funniest story that I'm not used to. I don't know that every data center can go down this route, but he said the cost we save alone in no longer having to negotiate with the business why they're not a tier one performance level saves my people, you know, uncountable amounts of time and effort and cost. And just this idea of redefining how we roll out applications, how we negotiate with the business, because they're all getting great performance. There is no discussion to be had in the service catalog that you're developing. It actually was a huge time saver. Now, that's not going to work for all customers, but we definitely see it changing when you get more experience it's some of the savings calculations are hard to understand up front in terms of management time, provisioning time, and discussing the service catalog with internal customers. Those are actually bigger differences than we even imagine.
I think in some respects, some of those are false arguments that get used in that TCO side of things. I see a lot of people quoting things like numbers of clicks, when they talk about things like provisioning. So when you talk about time to do certain processes, I think that can be very misleading because, you know, we don't have people who are sitting there like robots just click, 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 click all day. You know, there's other things that affect that process entirely. So what do you think typical price sensitivity or typical sensitivities are for people on their costs other than the dollar per gigabyte measurement? Do you think power and cooling has a big impact, or do you think that's just a great way of analysts talking about it?
No, we see a big, I mean, it depends on the before and afters, I suppose, but the biggest problem with power and cooling isn't that flash can make a massive difference, because it certainly can. It tends to be an organizational one, which is if IT is buying the storage and facilities pays the power and cooling bill, it's not a conversation the vendor's necessarily used to having. We need to broker oftentimes conversations because we have seen significant savings in that area. Some customers, and a lot of this is geographic, there's the concerns about having to build out data centers. I mean, we've had customers quite easily justify a move to all flash simply because it postponed by years, if ever, depending on the future of all of our data centers, right? They needed to build out a new data center just for pure floor space reasons. Now, I can't come in assuming that for most customers, but I'll certainly take the easy justification if they want to buy all flash.
I suppose it also depends on how the exec C levels are being targeted. I mean, as you said, you mentioned the problem of having facilities who may be in charge of a power and a cooling, whereas the CIO may actually have no incentive to reduce that at all. So it's getting that conversation going, which I think is a difficult one. Same with floor space as well. It's depends which budget, depends on the sensitivities of a company to an OPEX versus a CAPEX. Some people may think, oh, building a data center is an investment for us. It is a difficult one. And there's some interesting hidden, TCO advantages, which don't necessarily get talked about. If flash is your single layer, as you said, Bob, but you don't have to worry about everybody gets tier one performance, it will speed up obviously your deployment time, which I have some doubts about. My experience suggests that that's not a big problem, but it does help out where you've got developers and things like that. They don't have to spend an awful long time tuning their application.
I was just going to add one little bit to that, Martin. Sorry to interrupt, Bob. You can follow up in a second. I was just going to say that thing about data center space, it's a cost avoid potentially, not a cost saving, because ultimately if the data center already exists and it isn't fully occupied, then that cost has already been spent. So you're not necessarily saving anything unless you're really at that real end of being in a position where it's either buy a new data center or try and save the space that you're in. So sometimes those terms can be a little bit misleading.
Yeah, that's fair enough, I think. And the only point I was going to jump on to what Martin was saying is there is a certain element of looking at an application who's giving you performance trouble and realizing there's a rewrite required. And there can be a very tactical win that puts off something for some amount of future. You can actually, you know, you tend not to want to just throw technology at an architectural, be it badly written application or issue with an application. But we're seeing a lot of customers band-aid a lot of things by using all flash. Right or wrong, I don't know that I want to stop them.
Yeah, I've seen some people, I've seen some presentations by data center managers and storage managers saying they are throwing all flash at poorly performing applications. It's cheaper, quicker, and easier for the business for them to fix it at an infrastructure level than it is to get the application developers to go back and do a rewrite, because the business are really interested in new features as opposed to the existing features running a little bit better if it can be fixed very quickly with a Band-Aid.
On the one side, that drives me mad, because I just think, oh, really? Just write the software properly. You know, really does drive me mad. But on the other hand, I can see why that makes sense, because it's not about always doing the right thing and being, you know, doing everything perfectly. It's about what works out best for the business.
And there's a utility cost in that re-architecting, and it's already there. So we are seeing it. And you know, I use a funny analogy sometimes, too. Once what we were seeing is people, and I'm probably stealing this from someone in the industry, and if I knew who it was, I would certainly give them credit. But what we're seeing is people walked in with a rocket ship. That was the flash, all flash array startups, and people were driving cars that were the traditional storage arrays, and all of a sudden they tested their first rocket ship and said, oh, this is great. Was it really, you know, the best architected rocket ship? Was it totally suiting their needs? But it solved a pain point they had. And that's where we're seeing this all-flash market, to kind of bring it back to that level, develop, is around this idea of, well, I can fix that one problem I had. Maybe it was a poorly written query or who knows what. Why aren't I doing this for all of my systems? Now what's changed, I think, in the market is everyone has a rocket ship. The point earlier was, can you now tell if one's better than the other? And it's not as easy as vendors would like, but that is where we are, I think, in the market, which is now we all have all-flash arrays. We all have lots of different capabilities around data reduction and replication and all this. How do we help a customer figure out how to solve their problem? And my presumption is some of that is not just the technology, it's the engagement with the customer. But
let's talk about exactly how we do work out which companies we should choose in the marketplace. And let's talk about the analysts, because clearly the analysts have a place, and you know, some people think that they don't have a very, they don't, that their place should not be in discussing technology, but you know, and others are very happy to pay for the analysts to come in and give them advice. So the magic quadrangle type tools and diagrams that you see get produced by the analysts. I think I also called them supernatural polygons because I couldn't think of another description for them. But if you look at the way that those are produced, they obviously influence people, definitely, but they're also contrived, because in some respects, you know, you've got to qualify to get into them. And I think that was an issue for Hitachi.
It was. So there's a pretty popular quadrangle out there that we were not in for a long time. And to your point about the overall interest and use of analysts, you know, it varies by the customers we speak to, but a lot of them do listen. And I will say this, if I look at a geographic perspective, in places like the India and the Middle East and some of the Asian countries in particular, it was a point blank. Our short list is based on these documents. And so it did cause us some confusion. And I think as much as, you know, we do have to go through the process as a vendor, and sometimes that process is exhaustive and sometimes it's less. It all depends on the market space. But I think the biggest question is, does the definition and does the market make sense to break out? And if so, is it being defined in a way that makes sense for most customers to get their benefit out of what they're buying?
Because from my perspective, I just saw that the analysts were carving it out because it was easier for them to, or the way that they set the definitions made it easier for them to actually account for it. So if they were actually looking at the spend, if it was all flash in a box, they could say, well, we know that's all flash in that box, and therefore whatever that box cost, we can add it to a total that tells us that's what was spent on flash. Whereas if it was in a hybrid box, the costs couldn't be broken down very easily, and therefore they couldn't account for the flash component, and therefore they excluded it, which meant it was just really helping their accounting. What do you think, Martin?
As people who have followed my blog in the past will know, I'm not the biggest fan of most of the analysts anyway. But the way it gets split down, I think that we end up getting it far too granular. And so the problem with Hitachi, having Hitachi aren't the only companies been through this, where they could ship an all-flash version of their array, but because they were also hybrid arrays, so they get left off the quadrant, and they get left off the maturity models, which I think is very unfortunate. And I think it's because the analysts do like to simplify things. And it gives them another sector to write a paper on and sell that paper.
Oh, yeah, that you could look at that from the cynical perspective without a doubt, but you are right. I think that is true.
I was going to say, and I think Bob's right, there's also cultural things where people do listen to analysts. I think some of us who are a bit older and a bit long in the tooth are a lot more cynical about it, but it has been very important for people to get themselves on the analyst radar on in those quadrants.
Well, and I'd also say, as a vendor, I want to be very clear how much I love all of my analyst friends. But now that Hitachi is included in all the all-flash specific analyses, I think a couple of things. One is, far be it for me to suggest, too, the smaller you cut a market, the more likely you are to have multiple winners. And I don't know, sometimes vendors like to buy things that promote them winning. So that might help their model and calculation. I don't know, not having been an analyst. But, you know, I also think it's just, it is helpful in a way to say, if someone is hell-bent on looking at these new companies, if we were to keep the market at its larger and we were to say, yes, it's great you have all these new features, but back to earlier in the conversation, but our expectation is you're going to have everything from the systems you're trying to replace. It would be very hard for any of them, I think, initially to position themselves very well. So it is their way of sort of propping up and making a market. It may also be their way of finding a new vendor interest, because again, you whittle down the comparative, the more likely to have some leading vendors to look at.
Right, I think there's an interesting company who's missing from all of the vendors' analysis about your flash market, because nobody'd ever think of them, and that's a company called Amazon, where if you wanted to run your application basically in an all-flash type environment, you could just do so. You could just say, give me my EBS, and it's an SSD, or it's an IOP, it's a heavy IOP, and they never appear on any of the Gartner lists or any of the other analyst lists.
So that's probably a great discussion for another day, Martin, that the fact that, yeah, but we've got that whole cloud storage thing, and that really doesn't get any comparison, I don't think, done to it particularly. We should definitely save that one for another day. I'm going to move us on to the future, because I think that's a really interesting one. And I'm not going to put you on the spot, Bob, because obviously I'm sure you don't want to talk about futures before you're ready to announce them, because, you know, who would do that, to be fair? But you know, in general terms, there are definitely technologies that are coming up which are going to have a difference on the market. And we already see some of them coming in. So we see newer platforms like the SSD, MangStore, E8, that are coming out with new protocols and slightly different ways of doing things. Well, how do you think that's going to affect the way we go forward with the use of flash?
Well, I think we're looking at a solid state data center future, maybe sooner, maybe later. I think all of these things, you know, assuming we still care about private data centers in a few years, which I assume we will for some part of our applications, right? I think that majority that's left is going to be solid state. And then I think these things are related. I mean, I think the idea of, you know, NVMe or NVMF or what have you, it'll eventually come in and make a play. I can't say at this crystal ball moment I know what percentage will go there, but I think we're looking at sort of the new memory, maybe instead of the new flash system. And I think the whole line between server, storage, memory, persistent store, is they're blurring over time. You know, we tend not to be the bleeding edge. We tend to try to engineer the best we can, and maybe for some of these spaces, fast follow. So we're obviously have the stuff in our lab for NVMe, but I think there's other things that are going to come, like tiering. What will change with tiering? I don't know what you guys are seeing. I have some thoughts, but I think there's a lot of things that are going to change to drive more solid state in the data center.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. We talk about tiered flash products, and I think that's very much going to happen. We're already seeing it. Some of the vendors beginning trying to distinguish between their flash products, be it Pure with their flash blades, which are supposed to be more larger and it's slightly slower, less performant, but it's still going to be flash. And then NVMe over Fabric, it's certainly going to impact how we design data centers in the future.
I think I like the idea of the tiered side of things. I think that's a definite. I mean, it just has to make sense because, you know, we're coming out with so many variations of products. Why wouldn't we tier them when one type of flash is more expensive than another? But I do think that what Bob just said there is quite interesting, and that's probably, again, something else for another day, for another discussion, and that's the blurring between the fact that traditional arrays were always seen as the massive, slowest part of the infrastructure, and therefore it was easy to differentiate between memory and storage, whereas now we're getting more blurring where we've got flash as memory products, memory as persistent products, and all of it sort of blending together to be a bit more difficult to actually separate.
Well, as we like to say, Chris, data is persistent.
It's the only thing that I think it is, isn't it? You know, we have to focus on that. Okay, well, I think we're just about coming to an end of our time. I'd just like to thank Bob. Thanks for joining us, Bob. It's been really good, and for your insights and your opinions, and obviously talking a little bit about the company. So where can people find you if they're really interested in learning a bit more about Hitachi products and maybe interested in learning about you and, you know, what you do for the company?
Sure. Twitter follow might be the easiest. I'm B and my last name Madeo, Madaio on Twitter. And you'll occasionally find me writing kind of too lengthy, winding blogs on our community. So please follow. And guys, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
So I'll just say thank you on behalf of Martin and I to all of our listeners. And if you want to find more podcasts, you can find us at storageunpacked.com online. Follow us at Storage Unpacked on Twitter. Or you can join our LinkedIn group, which you can find on our website.